How you guys doing today? We're doing all right? Very good. Welcome. Welcome to Grace Community Church. My name is Greg. I'm one of the guys on the team here. And if you're new here, hope that you feel welcome. Let me kind of bring you up to speed on where we are. Here at Grace Community Church, we like to go through books of the Bible, one at a time from start to finish. And currently, we are looking at the book of Ephesians. For this reason, the gospel understood and applied. And last week, we were starting in chapter 5 and looked on the topic of sexual immorality and some of its dangers, and that the gospel actually brings healing, transformation, fulfillment. And so we're going to continue on. So if you have a Bible, turn to Ephesians chapter 5. We're going to start in verse 7. Otherwise, we'll have the scripture up here on the screen. So, so today we're going to talk about gospel-driven sex, okay? What in the world is gospel-driven? I'm glad you asked, okay? Because the scriptures do have an awful lot to say about sex, about sexual immorality and sexual purity and fulfillment. And we want to be able to understand that what is the gospel as it's understood, and how it is applied to every facet of our life. And so one of the things that when you go through the books of the Bible is that you come across some topics that need to be discussed that maybe sometimes they would be maybe jumped over or omitted. So a couple weeks ago, let me just preface how this is going to go today, all righty? So, because if you're new here, you're just going to go, what in the world have we gotten into? Don't worry. If there's seat belts on your chairs, just buckle them up. We're going to be okay, all righty? 2 weeks ago, I had the opportunity. I was at a health fair for young mothers. And I was on the panel. I was the one that was representing, you know, children's dentistry and such. I've done this for about 5 years with this particular group. There was like 200 women there, panel of like, you know, healthcare professionals and things like that. And out of the 200 or so people that were there, there were two guys, and I was one of them, okay? And some husband came with his wife to this. And so we get some questions that the ladies have. And, you know, being the dentist, you know, it's like you get these softball ones. It's like, you know, not a whole lot. So I'm just up there minding my own business. And then the moderator said, you know, we have some questions that have been turned in. And this is one that is, for the last number of years, has always been asked, but we've never really addressed it. And so, Sarah, you out in the audience, you asked this, so stand up and ask your question. And so Sarah stands up, and real nervously, she said, I have a 9-year-old daughter, and she is checking out books from the library about anatomy, and she's asking a lot of questions, and I don't know what to do, and I'm afraid that she's going to eventually figure out that it's like, Mom and Dad, is it, you know, you? And it's like, what do I do? And so, yeah. For me, you know, on one hand, it's like, be patient, be patient, be patient. Give me the mic. Now, give me the mic, okay? Because I want to be. So I stood up and I said, I think you got a great question. And I want to address this and I want to answer this as a dad of 9 kids. And she goes, good, because I was afraid how a dentist was going to answer this question. I said, we're not going to go there. So I said, you know, nervousness and think there's the nervous laughter. So I said, here's what you do. You tell her the truth. You tell her the truth. And you make sure that as a parent that you tell them, this is one of the things that my wife and I have done with our kids. It's like, you can always come to us and ask us because we will tell you the truth. Okay? I lived most of my life in locker rooms. I speak fluent locker room, okay? I can translate various sayings and things like that. That's where I got a lot of my sex education, okay? Tell your kids that they can always come to you as you have these ongoing conversations, as we discussed last week, about the sexual relationship. It's not the talk, but it's ongoing conversation, age appropriate. But let them know, you can always come to me Because I will tell you the truth, as opposed to your buddies in fourth grade or the seniors in high school that don't know what they're talking about. I will tell you the truth. Break down those walls. So they come. And I said, you have to tell her the truth. She goes, yeah, but I'm afraid that she's going to go and she wants to get like adult anatomy books and ask questions. Answer the questions. Age appropriately, answer the questions. But I'm concerned that she's going to figure out that Dad and I, that, you know, we do this. And it's like, tell her yes. If she asks why, tell her because it feels good and you love your husband. She asked more questions. I said, eventually she'll become maybe one of these snotty junior high kids will just say, well, why do you do it? You can also tell her at that time, because we're pretty good at it, okay? Boom, all right? Don't be afraid to tell them the truth. So my goal today is that, you know, Brooks last week talked about sexual immorality, and today we're going to be talking about sex in the light, okay? We want to find out, what does God have to say about it? There's enough stuff out there about the dangers of sexual immorality, how prevalent it is, how rampant it is, how it destroys everything. Okay, and what does God have to say about it? Because, you know, if we can embrace the truth, if we can embrace what's true, then we can embrace it and enjoy its fruits. So, why are we talking about sex? Because some of you here is like, well, this is not the place to talk about it. Well, this is a place to talk about it. The intimate stuff needs to be going on in your own household. Anyway, but the lack of biblical truth and instruction has caused a tremendous vacuum to occur. Because, like this one lady, Sarah, who was nervous to talk to her daughter about sex, Christians in the church, in their homes, also do not talk about this. And as a result, there's this huge vacuum. And of course, nature abhors a vacuum. So what happens is that perversions and worldly philosophies, they all rush in to fill the void, okay? As parents, we may feel at times, well, you know what, I'm a little hesitant to talk to my kids about sex and sexual intimacy. Let me assure you that there are plenty of people who are already having conversations with your children about sex. Planned Parenthood loves to talk to our kids about sex. The LBQTXYZ group loves to talk to our kids about sex, okay? People in the locker room, their peers, they are already talking to our kids about sex, okay? Now, up to 80% receive their training about sex from someone other than in the home. Think about this. Where did you learn the realities of the sexual relationship? Who did you have your conversations with? Who talked to you on an ongoing basis? Most of you are probably going, it wasn't at home. It wasn't with my parents. Had to learn it on my own. I remember talking with Brooks during one of our weekly meetings, and he said, you know, I had this men's group. There were 10 guys in it, and we asked this very question. 80% of the guys received their one-time talk on the sexual relationship from their mom when they were like in junior high. Can you think of a more awkward situation? Okay? Kudos to mom, you know, for tightening up the belt and says, someone's got to do this. Dad obviously isn't. Okay? But the idea is that 80% receive their training of sex from someone other than at the home. Like I said, there's all sorts of people that are already talking to our kids about sex. According to Pediatric Magazine, which is a medical journal, more than 40% of teens have had sexual intercourse before they even talk to their parents about sex. Son, we need to have the talk. I know, Dad. I know. I've been there. I mean, the horse is already out of the barn. By the time you sit down, 40% of the teenagers have already had sexual intercourse by the time mom and dad finally sit down, want to have their initial dialogue. Say, well, some people are thinking, you know, But that's the world. That's those pagans and those heathens. I'm so glad that my child has been raised in the church. Well, let's go to the church. I'm glad you asked. So let's go. So what about the current state of the church? These statistics are taken from Christianity Today, Leadership Magazine, which goes to church leaders, Dallas Theological Seminary for surveys they do with church staff. And here's what we find. 1 out of 10 men in the church are sexual addicts. These are not guys that just want to dabble in some porn every once in a while, okay? These are sexual addicts, okay? Ongoing, up to their neck, way deep into sexual immorality, okay? 1 out of 10. 37% of pastors report that they struggle with internet porn, okay? I don't buy that statistic. I don't buy that at all. I think it needs to be rephrased. 37% of pastors that have the honesty and the stones to report that they struggle with internet porn, because I think it's a lot higher than that. I think it's a lot higher than that. Okay? 1 out of 4 of our youth, these are in the church, okay, they've had sexual intercourse by the time they're 17 years old. Now, if we're wondering, I wonder what church that is. Why would we think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think that that statistic might not have some relevance on our own congregation, our own families, and our own youth? And then 2 to 3 full-time church staff step down each week due to sexual immorality. This was a survey done by Dallas Theological Seminary, and eventually they had to shut the books on this one because they said, you know what, they were looking for something else. They were surveying for something else, and this started to come up, and they go, OMG, have we got an issue? 2 to 3 full-time church staff. Full-time, okay? Full-time church staff. Each week, step down, just due to sexual immorality. That's huge. That's huge. Sexual issues are reported to be the number one cause of marital conflict and divorce. That's true if they are not Christian or they are Christian. Marital discord, struggle, conflict, and even divorce, many times it's like the number one cause is like there's sexual issues. Okay? So that's why we're talking about it. So what we want to do is we want to talk about, okay, we know there's a problem. What's the solution? Quit rubbing my nose into it. Quit telling me about how bad the situation is. What is the solution? And that's what we want to talk about today. What is the solution? We want to talk about sex in the light. And so a little review from last week. We found out that when we look in the scriptures, God intentionally created human sexuality and declared it to be good. In Genesis, he said, mankind he made, male and female he created them. Male and female, okay? And he said, it's good. Now, the word good there in the Hebrew means this pleases me. It's not that God said, okay, guy, gal, man, woman, that's good. No, it's like, no, this is part of creative genius, strategically and intentionally created. And he goes, this pleases me. The difference between men and women were intentionally designed that way by God's good intention and his creative genius, and it is something that pleases him. The other thing is that in the marriage relationship, as we look through the scriptures, we find out that the sexual relationship is for the marriage relationship. The sexual relationship is covenantal in its nature and in its foundation. That God designed that in a relationship, that there is a significant, special relationship for a man and a woman. They come together in a covenant. The only type of relationship that is described as one flesh given amongst men to enjoy. A man and a woman, they have this covenant relationship. That is the foundation for the marriage relationship. And as a result, sexual intimacy, sexual expression is to be for this special covenantal relationship. If we're trying to figure out, well, what's acceptable and what's not, this is the cornerstone right here. The scriptures say that if it's in the covenantal relationship, it's good. If it's anything outside of the covenantal relationship, it is not good. It doesn't please God, and it's not good for the people that are participating in it. If you're in a covenantal relationship and you're having sex with someone outside of that, it's not good. If you're a guy and you're having sex with a guy, and if you're a woman having sex with a woman, that's not in a covenantal relationship, that's not good. If you're having sex with someone else, something else, something else, sex with yourself, and it's not in a covenantal relationship, it's not good. It's for this express purpose for this one relationship. And the other thing is that in this relationship, that this is something that is consensual in nature. It's not one lording over the other. It's something that is to be enjoyed and practiced together. It is consensual. No abuse. No lording it over another. Not one dominating. Not one getting their own way all the time. It is something that is consensual. And it's not so much what are you doing in the relationship, but it's what are you doing and what is it doing to you as a couple in the relationship. It is covenantal and it is to be consensual. So, let's get to the solution. Why did God create the sexual relationship? You may be here and say, you know what, those stats, Greg, I'm in one or two of those. I don't know what your history is. I don't know what you're struggling with. I know that the struggle is real. I know that some of you have scars. Some of you are really strained in this. The solution, again, is to find out what it's in the light. What's in the light? If we go to the next verse in chapter 5, it says, therefore, don't be partakers with them. It's going back to the previous six verses in chapter 5 about sexual immorality. He goes, don't be partakers with them. Okay, don't engage in that. Why? Because you were formerly darkness. The scriptures are talking to the church, to Christians. He goes, you know what? You were formerly darkness, not just in the darkness. You were dark. That was your spiritual condition. He goes, but now you are light in the Lord. This saving relationship that we can have with Jesus Christ, to be forgiven of our sins, to be brought into a relationship, to all of a sudden begin receiving a new nature, a new heart that it says, the mind can start to be transformed, that we can start to live our life because it says you are now light in the Lord. Now walk as children of the light. The word walk there means to live your life. You can start now in this relationship. It's a new identity. It's a new identity that we now have in this relationship with Christ. And he says, let's describe it as light, okay? Well, what is light? Well, he just goes on. The fruit of the light consists of all goodness and righteousness and truth. You don't have to be some theologian to unpack that. It's how we think, what's true and what's not, to embrace the truth, walk in the truth, know the truth, understand the truth, what's real, what's fake, what's genuine, what's synthetic and bitter, and then to walk in it, to act on it, goodness and righteousness. You see, light in the scripture talks about something that is mental, thinking. It talks about that we can be in the dark as far as our thoughts, that we can, but we can also then come into the light and understand what the truth is. It also talks about a moral state, that there are deeds of the darkness and there is also deeds of the light. The mental state, it's the way we think, the way that we understand, the moral state, something that's expressed through our actions. And what the scriptures are telling us is that, you know what, there is something about sexual morality, sexual intimacy, that is something to be done in the light, something that is good and pleasing and right and correct. And if we would understand that we have this relationship with Christ, there's a proper way of thinking about it, and there's a proper way of expressing it. Goodness, righteousness, and truth. That those can be things that describe our sexual intimacy in our marriage relationship. See, it's about knowing the truth about sex and then expressing it in our relationship sexually. If we look up to the scriptures, look, verse 7 ends with this. Trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. The word that's translated trying to learn, it has this idea of investigating something. It's a term that's used with metal, and it says, investigate this metal. Find out what it's all about. Dig down deep into it. Experiment with it. And what you're going to find is that it's genuine and that it's authentic. Look at it from this way. Look at it from this way. Look at it from top and bottom. Look at it. Examine it. Learn all about it, because what you're going to find is that it is genuine and that it is real. When it comes to our sexual relationship with our spouse, there is something genuine about it. And the scriptures encourage us this trying to learn. It's an ongoing process. Much like we have ongoing conversations with our kids about sexual purity, sexual morality, sexual truth, the scriptures are saying when it comes to the sexual relationship in your marriage, to have sex in the light, learn about it. Go for it. Now, some of you are going to be blown away by this, because what it says is that these things are pleasing to the Lord. Do you realize that there are sexual thoughts, sexual understanding, sexual expressions that we as husbands and wives can participate in that the Lord says, that pleases me? Some of you is like, that weirds me out, okay? Why? God designed the sexual relationship. We didn't figure it out. He designed it that way. The reason why it feels so good, He designed it that way. The reason why it's so incredibly intimate, He designed it that way. It is a gift for marriages to enjoy and to grow in. And it pleases the Lord. It pleases the Lord. So let's find out why did God create the sexual relationship? Well, one is for pleasure. One is for pleasure. See, the sexual differences, along with the physiological and emotional responses, they're all by God's design. They're all by God's design. The reason why hormones all of a sudden can go nuts is by God's design. The reason why bodies respond the way that they do, it's by God's design. I am currently in an ongoing conversation about the sexual relationship with my youngest son. Our usual pattern at night is that he joins my wife and I in our room, and we've always had this where Dad reads something, and then Mama falls asleep, which is good. To have a monotone, droning voice is very soothing to her. She crashes, and then what I do is I take little buddy, we go into his room, and then he lays in his bed, and then there's another bed, and I lay in that, and we turn off the lights, and then he gets three questions. And it's usually like, Dad, did you ever play shortstop when you were in grade school? No. Where do babies come from? I mean, that's his thought process, you know? So over the last month or so, you know, I tell him, ask whatever you want. Whatever your kids ask, here's how you start back. That's a great question. That's a great question. Break down that hesitancy. Or that resistance, that's a great question. And then tell them the truth, okay? Age, not too much, but what's appropriate. And so at one time, he asked, and he said, kind of like, why do people do this? Well, it's pleasurable. Then he asked me, what does it feel like, Dad? Choose your words very carefully right now. And I just said, you know what, buddy? I can't explain it. There is nothing like it that I can compare it to. Well, why? That's the way that God designed it. Back to baseball, okay? But you can't. God designed it that way. For pleasure. Yes. Song of Solomon. It's a book in the Old Testament. And if you read it, it talks about this relationship that a young couple that they have with each other, their expressions of delight with each other. It can be very open, very intimate. Very, very intimate. And there's a lot of things that we can draw out of that. Now, sometimes there are some evangelical theologians that say, well, you know, the Song of Solomon, that's a book about really where to understand God's graceful relationship with Israel or Christ's relationship with the church. Okay. But just saying, when it talks about her necklace hanging between her two breasts, I am not thinking about Israel. Okay? When it talks about these moments of deep intimacy and joy and pleasure, let's take it for what it is. God designed it that way. He's got that intentionally in the scriptures for our benefit. Proverbs chapter 5 talk about a young man and how he is delighted with the body of his wife. Deuteronomy, here's one of my favorite. Deuteronomy chapter 24, it's in a section that talks about some of the civil responsibilities of the nation of Israel, some of the law that God has given the Israelites. And it says, when a man takes a new wife, he shall not go out with the army, nor be charged with any duty. He shall be free at home for 1 year, and he shall give happiness to his wife whom he has taken. So here is the instruction from the Lord on starting to give guidance to the civil, social network of Israel. And he said, look, when you've got a guy who's getting married, for the first year, he cannot be part of your army. If you're going to go out and wage war, he stays home. He cannot take any civil duty. He may be the sharpest knife in the drawer when it comes to society and politics, but no, not for that first year. What is he supposed to do? You free him up for what? He's to give happiness to his wife whom he has taken. That word happiness has the implication of sexual fulfillment. That God's design was that when a young man takes a woman for a year, the whole community understands he is to be free from any other obligation except for he is to give sexual happiness to his wife. Notice what it doesn't say. When people say, oh, this patriarchal Old Testament. Yeah, the focus is, young man, you please your wife sexually. You get to understand her sexually. You please her. You make her happy. You make it. That's your obligation. Not, young man, you're married for a year. Before you go out to war, get all you can get. Go ahead. Experiment. Do whatever you want. No. It is for the man to tenderly, carefully, intentionally, and intimately please his wife. God says it's that important. It's that important. The other one is perception. God created the sexual relationship. It's pleasurable. It's pleasurable. We can't get beyond that. He designed it that way. It's not man's invention. That's God. The other one is perception or deep communication. Genesis chapter 4 says this. Now the man knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain. It's not that they went to Starbucks, had a deep conversation, all of a sudden she's pregnant. No, the word knew means that they had sexual relationships. The idea is that there is an intimate communication that is going on here. It is a profound, intimate communication. Here's God's design. God's design is that in a relationship, in a marriage relationship, it starts with this spiritual oneness. It's a covenant relationship. And it said, you know, for this reason, a man will leave his mother and father, he will cleave to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. It's a covenant relationship. This type of one flesh relationship, it's only given in marriage. Marriage is the only relationship given among men that's described this way. It's a spiritual union. It's a spiritual oneness. The husband, the wife, and the Lord in this covenant relationship. Out of this closeness, this bondedness, comes then an emotional closeness, caring, tenderness, deep emotion, conviction, delight, pleasure. All of these emotions start to come out of this foundation. There is something that has a husband and a wife saying, you know what? Out of all these people, I choose you. Out of all of these people, I have friends. You are my absolute best friend. There is no one closer to me than you. This is what the foundation is. And then out of this emotional closeness comes the expression of a physical oneness. It's something so intense, so deep, so personal that it's that in the marriage relationship, there are things that need to be said, things that must be communicated that words alone don't do. That it actually comes out of our body to express things to our spouse. Things that can only be expressed to them by you. Things that you will express that you express to no one else. It is deeply, deeply intimate. It is deeply, deeply personal. And things are expressed one to another without words ever being spoken. This is one of the reasons why I think if we have open and honest communication about what the sexual intimate relationship really is, the world has nothing to offer. Nothing that will stack up to it. You see, God's design is that we, out of this spiritual oneness comes an emotional oneness. Out of this deep emotional bonding comes a physical oneness, this expression. Here's what the world has to offer. That when you're not having sex in the light, be as Christians, in this covenant relationship, there is a spiritual darkness. And so the focus is not on spiritual foundations or anything like that. The foundation of having sex as the dark in the world, without Christ, without God, all by ourselves, is that the focus is not on oneness. It is on physical sexuality alone. That's all it is. It says, look, this is what we've got. It's you and me. Let's make something happen. This becomes the focus. And as a result, because it's physical sexuality alone, what that leads to then is a real emotional emptiness. Maybe an emotional high that will last for a while. But really what it does, it's empty. It doesn't last. It's not genuine. It's very false. If you know a couple where the guy and the gal are living with each other, they just want to try this thing out before they would want to get married, okay? And let's be honest. From the guy's perspective, he gets to live rent-free sexually with this young lady for however long the relationship lasts. Why is she giving in to this guy physically and sexually without being married to him? What is she looking for? She is looking for an emotional closeness. She wants something that is secure. She ultimately wants a ring on her finger. She wants the commitment. She wants someone who will say, I will not leave you. I will not forsake you. Above all others, I choose you. She is longing for someone who would say, you know what? For this first year, my total goal is to bring you happiness, babe. It's God's calling on my life. It's you. It's all about you. There's no one closer than you. I love you. I adore you. And emotionally, you are my closest person. I want to be your best friend, your closest confidant. That's what she's looking for. What he is looking for is someone that's like a surrogate mom. Pick up after me, make sure I get some meals made, and then I can have as much sex as I want. You say, well, that's not true. Do this then. If you're in that kind of a relationship, young lady, just say, no sex until the ring comes on. Love you. Yeah, we can still share the bills, stay here. Yeah, you're still close, but no sex until we're married. How long do you think he's going to stick around? Before he said, you know what, it's just not working out. You know, it's not you, it's me. And that's when you look at him, just go, damn straight, it's you.
that in church.
Well, he just did. So, don't worry, the guy with all the filters, Brooks, will be back next week. He's looking for sex. He's willing to give some emotion to get it. She's looking for emotional stability. She'll give sex to get it. And it's a vicious cycle around the cul-de-sac that never goes anywhere. It only leads to destruction, lack of fulfillment, hurt, abuse, misery, pain. That's where it leads to. That's where it leads to. That's sex in the dark. That's why the emphasis then is so much on the physical. Let's try new things. Let's try new people. Let's try things that are on tape. Let's watch some stuff. Let's bring in some paraphernalia. Let's do. And it's always on the physical because the physical alone is not delivering. So, in God's paradigm, this is the reality of expressing love. There is something so deeply bonding that's going on, and it's a reality. They don't play games with the Lord. They walk with the Lord. They grow with the Lord. They're not perfect. Their marriage isn't perfect, but they understand this spiritual covenant, and they have an allegiance to it. They experience the emotional closeness, and as a result, there is something that must be expressed, and they are delighted to express it. That's the reality of expressing their love. In the world, all they can say is, hey, let's make love. When you use the phrase, let's make love, that implies that something's not there. It's like, let's make dinner. That means dinner isn't on the table. We need to do something to create dinner and then bring it about. And in the world's view and practice of sexual intimacy, making love is the admission that there is not love here on a genuine, deep basis, and we're going to have to do something to try and make it. Whereas sex in the light says there is something here, and it must grow, and it gets to be expressed. So the other one is protection. God created the sexual relationship for pleasure, perception and expression, and then for protection. So that's a little different. Protection. Yeah, to the church in Corinth, God had these words penned. Now, Corinth was a very sexually immoral culture. And the scriptures say, but because of immoralities, let each man have his own wife, let each woman have her own husband, let the husband fulfill his duty to the wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. Well, that sounds kind of crass. Well, what's the issue here? What's the problem? The problem in the context of 1 Corinthians 7 is sexual immorality. And Paul's writing to him, he goes, you know, because of these immoralities, I mean, they're real. Because they're there, something needs to be done. So who's he writing to? Who's being addressed here? It's not men and women, it's husbands and wives. He is writing this to those that are in a marriage relationship. He says, because of sexual immoralities and how prevalent they are and how destructive they are, he's addressed that. He goes, I want to talk to those who are married. What's the focus on it? The focus is this. Husbands, you have a duty to fulfill to your wife. Wife, you have a duty to fulfill to your husband. Well, that sounds a little different. Is sexual immorality prevalent? Yes. Is it destructive? Yes. What steps are you going to take to protect your marriage? I'm not talking about we need the culture, the school system, the society. No, your marriage. What steps, specific and strategic, are you and your spouse facing when it comes to sexual immorality? And what are we going to do to protect your spouse. Guys, what are the sexual immoral issues, temptations that your wife might be facing? Well, she doesn't have any. How do you know? Well, we just don't talk about those things. Don't keep it in the dark. You're not trying to criticize. You're trying to protect. You're trying to protect. Ladies, do you understand what temptations maybe your husband is facing? And then, these are the steps like for your husband. What plans and strategic initiatives have you made for your marriage? How many of you guys remember James Dobson and Focus on the Family? Used to listen to that over my lunch hours. Number of years ago, they had a women's conference, they had played the recording, and they were women talking to women, and there was one lady that got up there, and she was talking about this very verse, and she said, I'm going to tell you what, ladies, when it comes to sexual immorality, when it comes to the sexual relationship, she was adamant, no one satisfies my man like I do. I said, you go, girl. And she said, my husband, there are all sorts of forces that want him to look, to explore, but I'm going to make sure the depths of his heart that he understands no one will satisfy my man like I do. That's a woman who loves her husband. I met with a couple about a year ago. They were struggling. She was struggling with some severe anxiety, some demonic attacks. And so what I instructed, I said to the husband, I said, here's what you need to do. When she goes to bed at night, this is one of the things that you do, is that you pray over her. I said, you open up the book of Psalms. You sit on the bed next to her while she lays down. You start rubbing her feet, and you start reading scripture to her. So how long do I do that? Until things get better. Her anxiety goes away. These demonic attacks stop. So he came up to me one, he goes, you know, I said, how are things going? He goes, they're much better. I said, are you still reading her? He goes, no. And I said, why would you stop? So many ladies are going, hon, I'm feeling anxious right now. I'm like, would you do that for me? Why would you stop? He's protecting his marriage. So, there's pleasure, there's perception, there's protection, and then there's procreation. God told the first couple, be fruitful and multiply. What is your view on children? You know, when it comes to sexual intimacy in our culture, it's like the emphasis is on birth control, don't get pregnant, and if it does, kill it, okay? And some of that view has crept into Christians. In that, children are not seen as a reward, a blessing, an inheritance, and everything positive. It's usually seen as a burden, something to be tolerated. It's not good news, okay? Let me a little word of advice to you young people when you're going to get married or young couples. These young couples, if you just say, you know what? We're going to wait to have children because we can't afford it, okay? For like 98% of us, you can never really afford children. I'll guarantee you this, okay? Once you have children, okay, your standard of living will go down. Because same income, more people, okay. That's just going to happen. The other thing is that not only will your standard of living go down, but your quality of life may very well rocket and increase. But that depends on your view of children. Okay. There's a reason why God, I believe, gave children to come out of a sexual relationship that was given to people in a covenant relationship. Okay? Can we just boil this down to the adults in the room? He gives children to adults. And so young people, your views about children, you need to start acting like adults. Yeah, but we always wanted to go to Europe. Screw Europe. Have some kids and enjoy your family and grow up. Enough said. Okay. So, moving from darkness to light. He says, Brooks will be here next week. Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but even expose them. For it's disgraceful even to speak of things which were done by them in secret. But all things become visible when they are exposed by the light. For everything that becomes visible in the light. For this reason it says, awake, sleeper, arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Taking the unfruitful deeds and exposing them to the light. Here are some practical examples. If you're in darkness, maybe your sexual history, past or present, you realize, I am not only in the darkness, I am darkness. I need Christ. He says here, arise. Christ will shine on you. You call out to him and just say, I'm separated, I'm in darkness, my sin is consuming me. Come and wipe that out. Wipe out my guilt. Make me a child, a relationship, not a rule maker, a relationship and a new nature so I can walk and live with you and start the transforming of my mind and the renewing of my nature. If some of this is new and you just say, I've never heard some of this stuff about the scriptures, get to know Christ in the scriptures, in a book, in something like that, that talks about the reality of why God made the sexual relationship, and then start exploring it with your spouse. Have open conversations with your spouse. And here's the thing, is that if you're struggling with this, don't keep it in the secret. It will not heal there. Well, then what do you recommend? Expose it. Guys, go to another guy and confess it. But don't just stop there. Be accountable. Start getting some help. Start rebuking what's taking a stronghold in your life. Get some other guys in with it. Be accountable. Grow. Let the Lord change you. And as a result, when you are starting to walk in more power than in weakness, then you go and you talk to your spouse. And just say, I want to let you know, because I love you and because I want to experience this intimacy and because there's no one closer to me than you and I want it to grow, this is what has been going on. But I've been free of this for about 4 to 6 months now. And church, how we respond is so important. Because if there's a man or a woman that starts to confess this thing, wants to bring it out and expose it to the light of the gospel, you smack them down, they're going to go back in the secret and they're just going to stay there. And it isn't going to heal. You see, the thing is that the sexual intimate relationship is powerful and is personal because God designed it that way. And so as we walk with him, what we find out is that this issue that strangles our culture, destroys families and destroys people, it becomes exposed to his light, to him, and it heals. And what comes out of that is something that is good and perfect, thriving, and enjoyable. Why would we choose anything else? Why would we choose someone else than him as our Savior? So let's stand and let's honor him.